There are many different places where the Buddha talks about the right way to listen to the Dhamma. And in different contexts, he emphasizes different aspects of the ideal way to listen. In one, he talks about how important it is not to have contempt for the Dhamma, not to have contempt for the teacher, and not to have contempt for yourself. What this means is you listen to the Dhamma, you find it inspiring, and you realize that you too can practice this Dhamma. It's not beyond you. As the Buddha said, he taught the abandoning of unskillful qualities, the developing of skillful qualities. And if this were something we couldn't do, in other words, if we couldn't change our ways, there would have been no purpose in his teaching. But we can do this. That should be a source of joy. There's another passage where he talks about how joy is the ideal way of responding to the Dhamma. You get a sense of the meaning, you get a sense of what it's saying about what you're doing. It gives you joy. The joy is, as many of the Buddhist listeners would say, seeing something that was obscure suddenly becoming clear, something turned upside down, turning right side up. What this means, of course, is that even though you shouldn't have contempt for yourself, you should realize that you've been doing things in the wrong way. That's the message of the Four Noble Truths. As long as there's suffering, it's because we're doing things wrong. Things in the world outside may be horrible, and it can really be very horrible. But the fact that we're suffering from those horrible things has to do with our own actions. So it requires a certain amount of humility, but a certain amount of confidence. Humility in recognizing your mistakes, but confidence that those mistakes can be reversed. Just because you've been behaving in a certain way doesn't mean you have to keep on behaving in that way. In that first reference to how to listen to the Dhamma, the Buddha goes on to say, you listen with appropriate attention, and you listen with a single mind. In other words, you're focused fully on listening to the Dhamma, what it has to say. You don't let your mind wander around. As for appropriate attention, it means you ask the right questions. How does this apply to the way I'm causing suffering? What does it teach me about how not to do that? This too relates to joy. This is not the kind of joy that comes when someone tells you you're already fine just as you are. That's an immature attitude. The mature attitude is the willingness to see, yes, I've been making mistakes, but I can learn from them. As the Buddha said, when you see your own foolishness, the foolishness of your actions, to that extent are you wise? You realize the actions were foolish because you had a choice not to do them, but you did. If you didn't have any choice, you couldn't say they were foolish. They would have been forced on you. But you do have that choice. So you take responsibility. And there's a joy in being responsible. I've mentioned in the past that experiment they did to figure out what makes children happiest, especially babies. And the researcher found that they seemed happiest when they could do something again and again and get the same results again and again. It gave them a sense of agency. They could figure out, you do this, you get these results. You do that, you get those results. It clears something up. This is why babies, when they learn how to make a noise, will make it again and again. It drives you crazy. But it's their exercise of agency. You learn how to develop that joy and agency, not just to make repeated noises, but to figure out why you're suffering. As the Buddha said, our reaction to suffering is bewilderment. We don't know why it's happening. Until we search for someone who can find a way out, can recommend what to do. When the Buddha comes and shows you that the suffering is a genuine problem, it doesn't divert your attention off to other issues. And it shows you how you can put an end to suffering. That opens the door to agency. And you take his teachings and find that they work. That gives you even more joy. This, the Buddha said, is how people gained awakening listening to his talks. things were made clear. They took joy in that. From the joy, there was a sense of rapture, refreshment. From the sense of rapture and refreshment, there was ease, well-being. And the mind became concentrated. Now this fits into a larger pattern where he talks about how when you've been suffering, one of the responses can be conviction that there's a way out, that the Buddha is offering you this way. It makes sense. Conviction here means you don't necessarily know that it's true, but it makes sense, and you're willing to give it a try. And as you give it a try, you begin to see the results are coming. It gives joy, rapture, pleasure, concentration. And from then it goes on to knowledge and vision of things as they have come to be. In other words, you see causality as it plays out in your mind. This requires a quality of mind that, on the one hand, the Buddha calls luminosity. This requires a quality of mind that the Buddha calls luminosity. We hear this phrase that the mind is luminous. And some people think that it means the mind is already awakened, already pure. But if, as Ajahn Mahabhu pointed out, if we're already pure, why do we have to practice? And if it could be pure and then lose its purity, that means when it becomes pure again, well, it could lose its purity again. Look in the context of the Buddha says, when you understand this principle that the mind is luminous, then you can train the mind. You can develop the mind. In other words, the luminosity here means not purity. It means one's ability to observe itself, to watch its actions, to see what the results are when it does X, when it does Y, what the difference is, which is better. It's because we can observe our own minds. We can step back and watch them. And we can see what we're doing, what the results are. And the Buddha is giving us some standards against which to judge things. It's when you talk to yourself. The first question, is it true? Second question is it beneficial? Third, is this the right time and place for that? Because there are a lot of things you can convince yourself that they're true, but they don't lead to clarity. They don't lead to joy. The purpose of listening to the Dhamma, practicing the Dhamma, is to give rise to that sense of joy. Then if it's true and beneficial, then the next question is this the right time and place? Sometimes there are truths that are beneficial and they sound nice, but it's not the right time for that. Sometimes there are ones that sound harsh. Sometimes you think that when it's really harsh, it must be the Dhamma speaking to you, but that may not always be true. That's where you have to learn how to exercise some discernment. But again, the question is, does it eventually lead to joy? Because the Dhamma is meant to be enjoyed. The Buddha is teaching the end of suffering. It's strange that people find the Buddha's teachings pessimistic because he talks about suffering, suffering so much. Well, he talks about suffering because he's got a cure. There's a total end to suffering, and it is the ultimate happiness. It's not just gray pablum. It's the most positive goals that there can be. And it's something that you can attain through your efforts. And the path is a path of joy. So when you respond to the Dhamma with joy, the mature joy that says, yes, I have been making mistakes, but I don't have to continue making them. And the joy that comes when you can see that they were mistakes and you're beyond them. That's when you're responding to the Dhamma in the right way.